Hello, this is World Business Report from the BBC World Service, where we bring you the latest in money, marketing, manufacturing, and yes, much, much more. Please review us, rate us, share us wherever you can. BBC podcasts are supported by advertising.
Five women vying against each other.
Mountaineers who put everything on the line to follow their dreams.
To be the first to climb all 8,000 meter peaks.
The 14 highest mountains.
Amazing sports stories from the BBC World Service presents Chasing Mountains.
Every step was an achievement.
Listen now by searching for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Welcome to World Business Report here on the BBC World Service. My name's Ed Butler, and on this edition, Argentina's shock austerity reforms appear to be passing through the nation's Congress as we speak today. But what will they mean for one of Latin America's most perennially troubled economies?
You can explain it simply like reverse Robin Hood set of policies. Mainly is a promotion of plunder and short-term profits for financial markets.
The view of one less enthusiastic politician there. We hear more. Also, Beijing's motor show gets underway just as the EU and US consider further tariff measures against China's car industry. What is the mood among China's electric car makers at the moment?
Well, in China's big cities, more are choosing electric cars because they are good value for money and good for the environment.
Well, in the last few hours, the billionaire founder of the world's biggest cryptocurrency exchange, Binance, has been jailed for 4 months for money laundering. Changpeng Zhao, who pleaded guilty already, had paid a $50 million fine to US regulators for his crimes. "I'm sorry," he told the judge before sentencing today. "I believe the first step to taking responsibility is to fully recognize my mistakes." Well, Zhao is the second major cryptocurrency boss to be considering his mistakes. Just at the moment, Sam Bankman-Fried received 25 years behind bars back in March for stealing billions from customers of his now bankrupt FTX exchange. To consider all of this, I'm joined now by Hannah Miller. She's a tech and cryptocurrency reporter at Bloomberg. Hi, Hannah. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Were you surprised by merely 4 months? This was a lot less than some of the prosecutors were asking, isn't it?
Yes, prosecutors were looking for 3 years in prison, and that was actually double what the original sentencing guidelines were. You know, they were looking for a harsh sentence here, and that didn't happen today, which has surprised many in the industry.
Well, remind us then about Changpeng Zhao, or CZ, as I think he's known, amongst crypto people. Chinese-born, right? A man who emerged very much at the dawn of the crypto era.
Yes, he was one of the leading figureheads for the crypto space, probably the most recognizable name in the industry. And this has been, you know, a big downfall for him. Many looked at CZ as the industry's representative. After all, he ran the biggest crypto exchange in the industry. So this has come as quite the shock, especially following the downfall of Sam Bankman-Fried and FTX. It's yet another blow for the industry.
Yeah, and the charges against him, they are essentially what? I mean, he was being accused of money laundering, that the money passing through the millions of exchanges taking place over those years of its heyday between what, about 2017 through to the last two or three years, it was funneling money in some cases for terrorist organizations and others.
Yes, the main argument here is that there was violations of anti-money laundering laws, and that allowed criminals and terrorists to trade freely on Binance. They're very serious allegations. You know, the scale of what happened here was brought up frequently, during the sentencing proceedings. And, you know, even though traditionally similar banking law violations in the past haven't resulted in prison sentences, I think the judge here wanted to make a statement with sentencing, you know, CZ to 4 months. But many people argue that this did not go far enough, that this didn't send a strong enough message to potential bad actors in the industry.
There are other cases still pending, aren't they? Nigerian authorities are investigating the company. It's registered in the Cayman Islands. It's registered in so many different places, it appears. What is the connection between CZ? Oh, I suppose there isn't one, is there, directly between him and Sam Bankman-Fried? And yet, I guess in everyone's minds, they will be bound together, given the proximity of their sentencing.
Their relationship is very interesting. You know, they were once, you know, CZ was once Sam Bankman-Fried's mentor. They kind of became friends in the industry, then rivals. And things grew very tense between them. And you could argue that CZ and Binance had a serious hand in FTX's downfall. So it's interesting to see, you know, where both these former CEOs are now. You know, these are very different circumstances for CZ and Binance versus Bankman-Fried and FTX. With the FTX trial proceedings, there was a lot of focus on the abuse of customer funds, which was not the case here with Binance.
Right. It's complicated, isn't it? And we're going to be, I'm sure, in the next few days, considering this a lot more closely. But for now, Hannah Miller, thank you very much indeed. The issue of regulating, indeed, the entire crypto space falls very much on exchanges like Binance. Professor Carol Alexander she's a professor of finance at Sussex University and an expert in risk and crypto markets. I asked her just a few minutes ago what she makes of the demeanor of the US law enforcement agencies right now when it comes to regulating crypto.
Most of the exchanges that really matter, the ones that have the majority of the trading volume, are not regulated at all. And nor are they even domiciled in a country where there could be any litigation against them. So Binance famously has got all these different holding companies and so forth. And the new CEO has mentioned that they may choose a domicile like, I don't know, Singapore or whatever, which would enable them to actually be regulated. But up until this point, there is zero regulation of the practices that go on. The only way that the US can approach the problem of, for example, US investors using virtual private networks to trade on Binance, even though it is against the law, is to bring civil actions against them. And so we call it litigation instead of regulation.
There is still a certain cachet, a glamour, at least in certain cohorts of the global population, particularly perhaps in parts of the world where the local currency is incredibly turbulent already, the official currency, that is, mm-hmm. that people will look to this as an alternative. Do you see that as being the direction of travel when it comes to the kind of reputational value of these various cryptocurrencies? Or do you think that they are sort of veering ever more into a kind of a twilight zone of criminality and alleged money laundering and indeed having the books thrown at them by regulators?
Obviously, in Latin America, because of the volatile currencies there, Some countries, El Salvador, I think, has tried to use Bitcoin. And what's happening instead is that they're using these things called stable coins, which have a much more stable value. They're tied to the dollar. And it sort of enhances the dollarization of South America. So the white collar workers are paid in a stable coin called Tether. And they go out and they use Tether as their currency. But Bitcoin always started as a joke, right? It's the native token of the Bitcoin blockchain, which was started by some person or people called Satoshi Nakamoto, and we don't even know who they are. And on the back of all that, we've got this enormous decentralized finance, which is the sort of under the water part of the iceberg, which not many people know about. What you're reporting on and what most people are reporting on is the tip of the iceberg, the Binance, the FTX. And here it's not really the peer-to-peer decentralized stuff. It's, you know, cowboys that have taken over. And these are now being brought to account. But underneath the iceberg, there are like 20,000 different what we call tokens now. And they have a lot of value. It's what's driving the new digital economy.
Professor Carol Alexander there on the well-known cowboys at the top of the crypto world and perhaps the rest of the digital economy underneath. Ayako Yoshioka is a senior portfolio manager at the Wealth Enhancement Group based in LA. She's with us now. Ayako, just briefly, do you think that the world of crypto, indeed other exchanges, will be breathing a bit of a sigh of relief that it wasn't a more tough sentence today?
Hi, Ed. Thanks so much for having me. You know, I do think so. You know, the reaction seems to be pretty benign in the overall crypto markets. But, you know, the total assets at Binance are over $100 billion now. So they are a large player within the space.
They are indeed. Let's just go to some of the other stories affecting the markets right now. Amazon, it's said that profits in the first 3 months of this year have tripled as its cloud, its ads, and its retail businesses have been thriving.
Yes. Again, it seems everything points back to artificial intelligence. And Andy Jassy made a comment about AWS and its AI capabilities reaccelerating the overall growth rate of AWS, which is their cloud segment. So that's why Amazon continues to grow.
US stocks, though, generally ending lower on Tuesday as markets feel a bit down, it seems, about rising labor costs and a lack of consumer confidence at the moment.
Absolutely. Consumer confidence dipped to sort of the lowest since the middle of 2022. It came in at 97 versus 103 last month, and it's the third straight decline that we've seen in 2024. So inflation is really starting to, you know, again, continue to hurt consumers.
Ayako Yoshioka, for now, thank you very much indeed.
Lives Less Ordinary brings you remarkable personal stories from across the globe, from people who've chased their dreams.
No one knew that I was going to travel by bike. If I had told them that I was riding a bike to Egypt, they might have said that it was impossible.
To people who've lived through nightmares.
Being in jail in Thailand, I made a promise to myself in that jail that when I'm home, I'm going to volunteer somewhere.
Lives Less Ordinary from the BBC World Service. Find it wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
You are listening to World Business Report from the BBC World Service. The lower house of Congress in Argentina has given its general approval to comprehensive austerity measures proposed by the president, Javier Milei. The House in Buenos Aires is now voting on individual articles of the economic package, which has led to huge protests across that city in recent months. Lucia Cholakian is a journalist in Buenos Aires. She's been following all the latest. Lucia, where has the vote got to right now? They've been voting for 30 hours, I understand. So they're certainly earning their income there, the politicians in Argentina. How much longer do they have to go?
Hi, good night. How are you? Yes, indeed. It's been over 30 hours at this point. So the debate started yesterday around noon. The session started at 11 a.m. Then it took a little bit longer. But let's say that at noon, the debate started and it did not stop and has not stopped since. So we have the lower house members gathered inside Congress for more than one full day now, which, yes, it is quite impressive. And I've heard on the radio today that it's not something that happens in every country. I did not know this. I thought that it happened everywhere.
Yeah, it sounds like some kind of Guinness Book of Records competition, doesn't it, for who can stay up the longest. But, I mean, what has been approved so far in terms of the vote? What's gone through and what's going to pass the Senate, do you think?
So basically, this is part of a very large bill that was part of the pledge that Milei did right when he came to power. So his promise was to reform Argentina entirely and especially focusing on austerity measures and changing the way that the state works. So basically privatizing as many state-owned companies as possible, shortening the spending, the public spending, etc. So this bill is the second shot of the Milei's government in Congress. It was rejected in February, in Congress because it was very large. It had a bunch of articles. It was very hard to cover. And this is the shorter version that basically grants the president extended legislative powers for 1 year in the areas of economy, finance, and energy, which is not small at all. It restructures various state organizations, allows the privatization of some state-owned companies, including public radio, public television, the public airlines, public trains. It extends the probation period for new hires. So it includes a very thorough labor reform that basically shortens the rights of workers in the private sector and the public sector as well, and changes a lot of pension rules and fiscal rules as well. So it's quite shocking.
It's quite shocking. It's a very wide-ranging bill of measures. I mean, the president was obviously elected, wasn't he, on this program? He was elected on being the kind of the guy, the shock troops who would bring in the austerity measures that would shake up Argentina, which is, of course, a country that's used to decades and decades of constant economic turmoil, a sense that nothing can ever be put right, that there are problems with corruption and too many vested interests. That was the popular view. I noticed that the markets in Argentina have been relieved that this is passing. The stock index seems to be up. Do you think that how will the people at large be responding? I mean, how have they been responding in the 6 months or so that President Milei's been in power?
Well, you're right. Milei won with a huge victory, over 55% of the vote. So it is indeed something that it's important to note. He was very clear right from the beginning of the campaign what his aim was, and he promised to do exactly the things that he's doing right now. Argentines voted out of a political system that they thought was rotten or too old, was not working anymore. We have to know that Argentina right now has a 288 year-over-year inflation. So we are indeed going through a very critical situation, and it's been like this for the past few years now. So from the voters, what I can say is that the support is continued. Of course, things have gotten very, very difficult for the working class, especially over the past few months. With raises in basically every sector of the economy, a lot of layoffs, the loss of purchasing power. But as you noted, some sectors of the market and large businesses and foreign investors are indeed happier and feel more welcome by the government of Milei in comparison to the past governments.
Okay, well, we'll see how this one goes. Lucia Cholakian, thank you very much for now. Now, staying with this subject, I spoke a short time ago to somebody who clearly is not enthusiastic about the president's reforms. He's called Juan Grabois. He's a lawyer and an academic, and he was recently a candidate in the presidential election running against President Milei. This is what he had to say.
This is like a package of fiscal laws, state reforms, privatizations. These are more than 300 norms and articles with different topics. You can explain it simply like reverse Robin Hood set of policies that will bring social instability and political instability in Argentina, but mainly is a promotion of plunder and short-term profits for financial markets.
I can tell you're not a fan of any of these measures. I mean, in brief, they include greenlighting a one-year economic emergency. They include powers that allow the president to dissolve state agencies, the possible privatization of about a dozen public companies.
Yeah, it's like he's getting powers as a king in this country when he was elected for president. So he has superpowers now for do whatever he wants. And this is not consistent with a stable and sensitive policy. We have already a social emergency. We have 60% of our people in poverty. And now we have a tax rise for workers and whitewashing for financial criminals. I think that this is a breach of the electoral contract.
But to be fair, of course, he was elected to introduce shock measures. Argentine people generally are fed up with the constant churn of economic crisis after economic crisis, and they wanted somebody who was really going to shake things up and just get rid of all the vested interests that seem to dominate the political system in your country.
This kind of shock in a country that is already in shock won't bring any stability. He was elected with absolutely different promises that is doing. For instance, the income taxes for workers. He voted a year ago to take this off, and now he's increasing the taxes for workers. And all what we can see here is a revival of 90s policies, but specifically aimed to short-term profits for financial sector.
I can see that there are more strikes planned this week. Do you expect there to be more turmoil, more upheaval, if these laws are all passed today in the Senate as well as in Congress?
Yeah, what I see is that the social turmoil will bring a political crisis. We are going from a wrong to a worst scenario, not a better scenario. And I don't think that productive investors will invest here. I really don't think so. Maybe in the mining sector, maybe in the extractive industry sector, but this is not sustainable. So he was elected in a ballotage with 4 points more than the opponent, and he's acting as he has full powers, and democracy doesn't work like that. So if you give special superpowers to a president, that goes against constitution, and this is done specially to go against the majority of people, I think that it will be very clear in next elections that he has legitimate origin, but in his exercise of the presidency, he's losing legitimacy day after day.
That's the former Argentine presidential candidate, Juan Grabois. Beijing, Brussels and Washington are preparing for a major showdown, it seems, over electric vehicles. One of the brightest lights of the Chinese economy right now is being challenged, potentially with EU and American tariffs, designed to slow the country's sales of EVs. The US and Europe have accused China of unfairly propping up its electric car market, giving the country's automakers an advantage internationally. And it's thought the European Commission's anti-subsidy investigation could be planning some kind of very specific economic sanctions in response. Yet with the annual sales of EVs up above 30% of all cars being sold in China right now and exports surging, the mood in Beijing seems extraordinarily optimistic, on this front at least, as China correspondent Stephen McDonnell has been finding out in the halls of the Beijing Auto Show.
Until very recently, the idea that electric vehicles would make up a significant proportion of all cars on our streets was something from the future. And then China went and made the future now. It's done this by breakneck growth in the electric vehicle market, pushed along by significant government subsidies. Now, the problem with those subsidies is that Europe and the United States are saying that that's given Chinese brands an unfair advantage, that they're able to flood markets overseas with cheaper products, products that the local brands can't compete with, in an unfair way. And they're threatening to slap tariffs on Chinese brands to level the playing field. But the flip side to that argument is that at the beginning, government support was needed to have enough charging stations rolled out, to have a significant enough part of the market made up by electric vehicles so this new technology could survive. The biggest change, however, has come in the form of people's attitudes. If you speak to prospective customers here at the huge Beijing Auto Show, you get an idea of this.
In China's big cities, more are choosing electric cars because they are good value for money and good for the environment.
New energy cars have become totally normal and accepted.
They have good tech and they're good to drive.
China's electric vehicle industry is showing off what it can do at the Beijing Auto Show. You can ask a car to find a restaurant for you nearby. And flashy on-screen displays offer movies to watch while you're parked and waiting to pick up someone. There are charging stations boasting 500 kilometres or 310 miles of driving after just 12 minutes plugged in
and established international brands like Mercedes, Buick, Ford and Volkswagen are also taking on this country's many new players here, sometimes in partnership with Chinese companies. Chinese companies have invested heavily in the development of electric vehicles, building huge new factories and the like, and they are going to require export revenue to make their money back. Many won't make it because the competition is just so fierce. But the upside for them is that they can always fall back on a significant domestic market, which is only getting bigger as more and more people make the switch away from traditional to electric vehicles.
The BBC's Stephen McDonnell reporting there from the Beijing Motor Show. Now let's finish the programme with some more of the latest market news. Ayako Yoshioka is still with us, Senior Portfolio Manager at Wealth Enhancement Group. Hi there again. And now the Eurozone. The Eurozone has emerged from recession with higher than expected growth in the first quarter of this year. That's good news, isn't it? And perhaps not news we've been hearing very much of late from the EU.
Yes, it was nice to see the first quarter real GDP number post a number of 1.3% annualized versus an expected 0.4%. And it's much better than what the U.S. Reported for their first quarter real GDP number.
What's the expectation, though? I mean, everyone always asks this, don't they? On the ECB rate cuts, potentially. I mean, we've been hearing, haven't we, that the Fed is going to hold off from any kind of rate cuts. Does that mean that the ECB and the Bank of England and all the other big central banks are going to be holding off too, do we think?
You know, I think the ECB is on track still for a rate cut in June because, you know, inflation continues to be, on track at around that 2% target.
Okay. One other story. The pharmaceutical company Eli Lilly upgrading its annual revenue forecast by $2 billion.
Yes, absolutely. Eli Lilly, as well as Novo Nordisk, are famous for their weight loss drugs. Eli Lilly has Zepbound and Mounjaro for diabetes, but both drugs are in shortage and the demand is very high. So they are very confident that they can have greater sales in the back half of this year.
Okay, your final thoughts on this, Ayako. If a young woman wants to be successful in a career in tech, then they must be resilient. So says the CEO of the dating app Bumble, who's been speaking to the BBC. This is Lydiane Jones, starting from humble beginnings in Sao Paulo in Brazil, and she's been the boss there for 4 months now. Sorry, we don't have that tape right now. I was going to ask you your thoughts, whether you felt like the dating app bubble has burst or if Bumbles are still going to be bumbling along for as long as we can tell for the time being.
Well, you know, it's tough to say, but I think resiliency among, you know, women in general, whether you're in tech or in finance, continues to be something that we look for and is a strength for many women in the industry.
Ayako Yoshioka, thank you very much indeed. That's it for today. Thanks for listening.
The mountains are what keeps me motivated in life.
It's where we get to ask ourselves who we are and who we want to become.
At the turn of this century, 5 mountaineers set out on individual missions to become the first woman to scale all 14 of the world's 8,000ers. 14 mountains, all above 8,000 meters.
It was about pitting themselves against nature rather than each other.
They knew only one of them would succeed, but whether they liked it or not, it would come to be seen as a race.
5 women vying against each other.
The media needed to find some competition, and they find it.
A race with deadly consequences.
We are just not designed to live in these environments.
Getting down alive was my only goal in that situation.
Amazing Sports Stories from the BBC World Service tells their story in Chasing Mountains.
Every step was an achievement.
Search for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.